Hello and welcome to the show at our new time. I'm Arnold Naidu, sitting in for Riz Khan. Since the Gaza war, has international support for Israel been falling, and will it force Israel to negotiate peace with the Palestinians? The Israeli army has prepared a document to counter the findings by South African judge Richard Goldstone about Israel's war on Gaza in 2008 and 2009. That report concluded that Israel used disproportionate force, killing more than 1,400 Palestinians, mostly civilians. Israel is also trying to restrict the damage from a diplomatic spat with its biggest supporter, the United States. That happened after Israel announced its plans to build more settlements in East Jerusalem. Today we ask, how are international perceptions of Israel changing, and what are the chances for peace? Remember, you can join our conversation with your questions and comments. You can also send us an SMS or email, and of course we welcome your phone calls on the show. I'm joined now from New York by American political scientist and author Norman Finkelstein. His latest book, This Time We Went Too Far, Truth and Consequences of the Gaza Invasion, is being released this week. It explores the possibility of a shift in relations between Israel and its allies, especially after Israel's military operations in Gaza. Professor Finkelstein, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the book is a very serious indictment of Israel and its policies in the occupied territories. You focus on the war in Gaza that was towards the end of 2008 into 2009, and you're very critical of Israel. In fact, you call the operation, these are your words, premeditated slaughter, a massacre on the part of Israel. Very harsh words indeed. The Israelis, of course, will say that they were acting in self-defense, that Hamas was firing rockets into southern Israel, targeting civilians, and that their patience had run out.
Well, that justification by Israel is simply not credible, because on June 19, 2008, Israel entered into a ceasefire agreement with Hamas, a ceasefire agreement brokered by the Egyptians. And even the Israeli foreign ministry stated that Hamas, and now I'm quoting the Israeli foreign ministry, Hamas was careful to maintain the ceasefire. In fact, Hamas maintained the ceasefire even though Israel reneged on its terms according to the ceasefire. Israel was supposed to gradually lift the blockade of Gaza. Israel did not gradually lift the blockade of Gaza, but Hamas was careful to maintain the ceasefire. The ceasefire broke down, as Amnesty International pointed out in its annual report for 2008. The ceasefire broke down on November 4th when Israel invaded Gaza and killed seven Palestinian militants. That's when the rocket fire began. And in fact, Hamas, down to the end of December, kept saying, we are willing to renew the ceasefire, if Israel abides by the terms of the original agreement. That is, if Israel gradually lifts the blockade of Gaza. But Israel demanded an unconditional and unilateral ceasefire by Hamas. But a ceasefire which would have left in place a blockade which Amnesty International called a flagrant violation of international law.
Well, but Israel says that up to that point, when it carried out that raid in November, that it was observing the ceasefire as well, but Hamas continued to fire rockets into Israel, although at a very reduced number. And the point that the Israelis make was every single one of those rockets was a violation of the ceasefire.
No, that's not correct. Israel itself does not claim that Hamas was firing rockets. Israel itself says it was renegade, and I'm using their language, not mine, it was renegade terrorist groups in Gaza that were firing the rockets, not Hamas. And in fact, even if you look at the latest Israeli report, the one that came out last week by the Intelligence and Terrorism Center in Israel, they acknowledge that Hamas's internal security, internal security was trying to stop the renegade terrorist organizations from firing rockets in Israel. And in fact, if you look at the tables and the graphs by Israel, in October 2008, right before the Gaza invasion, for all of October, there was one rocket fired and one mortar fired from Gaza.
But I suppose the point that Israel was making is whether it's Hamas or whether it's renegade groups, the rockets were still targeting civilians in southern Israel.
No, this is ridiculous, with all due respect, and I understand that you're simply repeating the Israeli claim. The attack on Gaza had nothing whatever to do with the Hamas rocket and mortar attacks, because if Israel didn't want those rocket and mortar attacks, it could simply have abided by the ceasefire terms and not broken the ceasefire. The attack on Gaza was, as Israel repeatedly said, its purpose was to restore what it calls its deterrence capacity. That is, its ability to create fear in the Arab world. And Israel was concerned that after its defeat in Lebanon in July and August 2008, it was concerned that after its defeat, its deterrence capacity, that is to say, the Arab fear of Israel, had significantly diminished. Israel entered Gaza and carried on, as its own officials said, carried on as a mad dog, I'm quoting Israeli officials, carried on in a lunatic fashion, carried on, as Tzipi Livni put it, in a wild fashion and with real hooliganism. Israel went into Gaza and carried on with real hooliganism in order to destroy as much as they could and thereby transmit the message to the Arab world that if you mess with Israel, we will do to you what we did to Gaza. It had nothing at all to do with the rocket attacks.
Okay, so you're saying that this was a deliberate provocation by Israel, and in fact, Hamas fell for it.
It's not just my opinion. Remember, the conclusion of the Goldstone report was that Israel used disproportionate force designed to punish, humiliate, and terrorize a civilian population. Notice, there is nothing there about Hamas rocket attacks. It was aimed at the civilian population, and it was designed to punish, humiliate, and terrorize them. Okay, that's what the Goldstone report concluded.
Okay, so let's go to the phones right now. We have a caller. This is Andrew calling us from Virginia. Andrew, go ahead with your question.
Yes. Every time Israel is criticized for its war crimes and actions, it says that it's a deterrence to the peace process. But every time they come to the peace table, all they bring is an empty plate. I think it's very disingenuous of them when they make this claim that the criticism of Professor Finkelstein is hindering the peace process. Also, Professor Finkelstein also said that Israel used insane amounts of firepower against the targets. And are there any charges going to be brought against the units involved in direct attacks on the UN?
Well, let's put that question to the professor. Can any charges be brought against units of the Israeli Defense Force?
Yes, and I will get to that in one half moment. I want to just address directly some other aspects of the question. We have to be very careful about our use of language, because we don't want to intentionally or unintentionally become become agents of Israeli propaganda. So number one, there was no war in Gaza. As one Israeli soldier put it, what happened in Gaza was like a child with a magnifying glass burning ants. That's not a war. When you have a 400 Palestinians killed for each Israeli, 400 Palestinian civilians killed for each Israeli civilian killed, 100-to-1 ratio overall of civilians and combatants killed, 400-to-1 civilians, 100-to-1 overall, 1,400 Palestinians, 13 Israelis. That's not the ratio of a war. That's the ratio of a massacre. So number one, we have to be careful not to call what happened in Gaza a war. It was no more a war than Sabra and Shatila was a war, or Sharpeville was a war, or My Lai was a war. Number two, there is no peace process. You judge a process after a certain period of time by outcome and consequences, not by words or even intentions. So if you say the so-called peace process began with the Oslo Agreement of September 1993, and you look over the past 17 years since that process has begun, it's quite obvious that there has been no progress towards a peaceful settlement. But there has been significant progress towards Israel's annexation of the West Bank. There are now 500,000 settlers in the occupied Palestinian territories. Israel has built a wall which has appropriated approximately 10% of the West Bank. So what we have seen is an annexation process, a colonization process, an appropriation process, but there has been no peace process.
Okay, Professor.
Number three, let me just get to the question. Yeah. Number three, it was not me that said Israel used insane amounts of firepower in Gaza. Let your listeners and viewers enter the words breaking the silence on their Google search, and up will come a collection of testimonies by Israeli soldiers. And then let them enter the word insane on their search function. Okay. And you'll see one soldier after another, after another, after another, said that Israel or Israelis used insane amounts of firepower in Gaza.
Okay.
As to whether or not they can be brought to justice, that all depends on us. If we can create enough public opinion which demands that justice be done and those who committed the massacre in Gaza be brought to justice, then it might happen. I myself am hoping that I'll get an invitation from the UN General Assembly to have the occasion to speak to them, to speak about what happened in Gaza, and to demand or to encourage the General Assembly to act.
Okay, sir.
Because one of the things Richard Goldstone recommended, Richard Goldstone said that the General Assembly has the power to act if it wants to.
Okay, Professor, we are going to have to take a short break right now. We'll continue our discussion. More of this discussion in a moment. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're examining if the Gaza war and its aftermath has caused a shift in ties between Israel and its allies. How will Israel also deal with the increasingly impatient Obama administration that says Israel must create conditions for peace with the Palestinians? Joining me now from New York is American political scientist and author Norman Finkelstein, whose latest book is This Time We Went Too Far, Truth and Consequences of the Gaza Invasion, and that is going to be released this week. Professor, welcome back to the show. I just want to bring up a point that you were talking about. You were saying that Israel has annexed large portions of Jerusalem as well as the West Bank, but at the same time, Israel did unilaterally pull out of Gaza, didn't it?
No, it did not. If you look at all the human rights reports, and here I include Human Rights Watch, I include Amnesty International, and I include the Goldstone Report, they all analyzed what Israel did in 2005, at the end of 2005 in Gaza. And they all came to the same conclusion. They concluded that Israel redeployed its troops in Gaza from inside Gaza to the periphery of Gaza, but that Israel continued, and I want to emphasize this is the conclusion of all human rights organizations, Israel continued to be the occupying power in Gaza. What Israel did basically was it threw the keys to the prisoners so they can get out of their jail cells, but then shut tight the prison gates and redeployed their troops on the periphery of the prison. So Israel continued to control the territorial waters, the airspace, who went in and who went out of Gaza, what went in, what went out of Gaza. It continued to invade Gaza. It continued to create a no man's land on the border of Gaza. Israel continued to be the occupying power.
Okay, I want to get to another one of our viewers right now. This is James calling us from Los Angeles. James, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Finkelstein has been courageous in speaking out against Israeli war crimes. He'd actually mentioned in person that the pro-Israel lobby, AIPAC and similar, was responsible for the ongoing settlements in the West Bank and what Israel and how Israel is being protected by the U.S. However, I'd also like to ask him what he thinks of the Transparent Cabal book by Dr. Steven Stogosky, and you can find out more about that at America-Hijack.com. It actually conveys that the Iraq war and the coming war with Iran was conducted to basically take down regimes like Saddam Hussein and the current Iranian regime that were supporting the Palestinian people, so the Israelis could eventually transfer the Palestinians off their land, or the Palestinians would give up hope and submit to the will of Israel. Again, I salute the courage of Dr. Finkelstein for what he spoke with regard to him speaking out against Israeli war crimes, and I'll leave you with a website, tinyurl.com/US opposes Palestinian.
Okay. All right. Thank you, James. Okay. Let me put that to the professor.
With all due respect, we have to be careful about indulging in conspiracy theories which have no basis in fact and for which there is no evidence. There is no question, if you look at the scholarship and you look at the memoirs of the attack on Iraq, that the main architects of the attack on Iraq were Mr. Cheney and Mr. Rumsfeld. It was their war. And say what you want about Mr. Cheney and Mr. Rumsfeld, it's quite clear that they're looking out for American interests. They're not looking out for Israeli interests. And they're certainly not going to launch a major invasion in order to facilitate Israel's expulsion of the Palestinians from the occupied territories.
Okay, Professor, I want to get to another caller now. This is Khalil calling us from Romania. Khalil, go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go
yes,
ahead with
I
your question.
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. I have a question to Dr. Norman. I've watched a lot of your lectures, and I'm aware that you are in favor of two-state solution based on the was in the 1967 border. However, I would argue against this solution, but I would ask you why don't you apply the same criteria when you talk about a two-state solution on the 1967 border? Why don't you apply the same criteria on a two-state solution on the 1948 border? So why the criteria applies on the land that Israel occupied after 1967.
Okay, Khalil, we're running out of time. I want to give the professor a chance to answer that.
Well, I want to clarify that I'm not in favor of the two-state settlement. My view is it's the only settlement which is politically possible now. speaking personally for myself, personally, I would like to see a world without any states. But that's obviously not politically possible now. The international community has repeatedly called for a two-state settlement on the June 67 border with the right of the Palestinians to exercise self-determination in the whole of the West Bank and Gaza with East Jerusalem as its capital and a resolution of the refugee question on the basis of the right of return and compensation. That's the settlement which the international community has embraced. And it's Israel, backed by the United States, which has repeatedly rejected those terms for settling the conflict. And in my opinion, it's not possible to resolve the conflict in defiance of international opinion. If international opinion says this is the best arrangement that's feasible now, I think supporters of the Palestinians have to embrace that settlement and try to get the United States and Israel to act in conformity with international public opinion.
Okay, Professor, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us today. That was Professor Norman Finkelstein joining us from New York. Thank you for being with us. Remember, you can watch a podcast of the show on iTunes. This week, we're featuring a discussion on whether the growing export of U.S. weapons around the world industry is fueling global conflict, especially in developing countries. On the next show, we take a look at the impact of humanitarian aid as donors meet in New York to discuss Haiti's relief and recovery. We ask, do NGOs actually hurt more than they help? Make sure to tune in for that. We'll see you the next time.